Tom's mother died on the 14th of March of a heart attack in the kitchen of the small flat she had lived in for 32 years. She was 78. Tom was 42. He had two children of his own, a wife he had been married to for 14 years, and a job at a bank that he liked less and less each year, although he had not, at this point, said so out loud. His mother had lived alone for the last 10 years, since his father had died. There was a daughter, Tom's older sister, Ellen, but she lived in Manchester, and Tom, who lived 20 minutes away from his mother, had been the one who saw her most often. He had been the one the hospital phoned. He had been the one who sat with her in the small white room while the consultant explained, with the careful kindness of his profession, that the second heart attack had not been one she could survive. He had been the one who, 4 days later, had stood in his mother's flat with the keys in his hand and had not, for some minutes, been able to put one of them into the lock. In April, Tom and Ellen agreed that he would clear out the flat. Ellen was working long hours. Tom was, in his sister's phrase, closer to the ground. He took 2 days off work. He believed, on the morning of the first day, that 2 days would probably be enough. He was, of course, wrong about this. The flat was full of things. The kind of things that are easy to ignore when a person is alive in their home and impossible to ignore when they are not. There were photographs in albums and photographs in frames. There were letters from people Tom did not know, in handwriting he did not recognise, mostly from the 70s and 80s. There were clothes his mother had not worn for 20 years. There was a saucepan he remembered her cooking porridge in when he was 7. There was, he thought, more in this flat than there was in his own house, although his own house contained 4 people and his mother's flat now contained, very briefly, only him. He worked through the rooms slowly. The kitchen was the easiest because it was mostly objects whose use he understood and whose disposal he could decide. The living room was harder because of the photographs. The bedroom, on the second afternoon, was hardest of all. He sat on the edge of his mother's bed for some minutes before he started. The duvet was the same one she had had since he was a teenager. The bedside table was the small wooden one his father had built in the 70s, in a workshop he had been very proud of. There were 2 drawers in the table. The top drawer contained, what Tom had expected, a pair of reading glasses, a pencil, a small notebook, 2 old greetings cards, and a pair of woolen gloves she had not by now worn for years. Under the gloves there was a small black mobile phone. Tom recognised the model. It was a phone from about 10 years ago, the kind people had bought before smartphones became common and which some older people had continued to use for some time afterwards. The phone was switched off. Tom held it in his hand and turned it over. It was not heavy. There was a small scratch on the back, which suggested the phone had been used, although not, perhaps, very often. Tom knew his mother's phone. It was a newer model, a basic smartphone, which he himself had bought her 4 years ago, and which was at this moment in his pocket. The hospital had given it to him. He had used it that week to find the numbers of certain relatives. He had not known, at any point in his life, that his mother had owned a second phone. He looked again in the drawer and found, at the back, a charger. The charger fitted the phone. He plugged the phone in and sat on the bed and waited. After 8 or 9 minutes, the phone vibrated and turned itself on. The screen showed the time, the date, and a small icon indicating that there was 1 new message, sent that morning at 9:20. Tom hesitated for a long moment, with his thumb above the screen. Then he tapped the message. The message read, "Maria, I have been thinking about you all week. I hope the new tablets are working. I know you said not to worry, but I am, a little. Please tell me you are all right. Call me when you can. M. Tom read it twice. Maria was his mother's name. He had known this all his life, although he himself had only ever called her mum. The M at the end of the message was a person he did not know. He scrolled slowly through the rest of the messages. There were 72 of them, going back nearly 2 years. They were all from the same number. They were all signed M. He did not read them. He understood, with a kind of internal stillness, that he should not read them. At least, not yet, and possibly not ever. The messages had not been sent to him. Reading them, in this moment, would not be the same as reading the letters from the 70s in the living room. Those letters were old enough to be history. These messages were 2 years old. Some of them, at least one, were from a person who, at this moment, did not know that the woman they were addressed to had been dead for nearly a month. Tom sat with the phone in his hand. The flat was very quiet. The traffic outside the window was the same traffic that had been there an hour ago, and would be there an hour later, and would have been there on the morning of the 14th of March, although on that morning he had not been listening to it. He thought about the message, and about M, and about his mother, about whether she would have wanted him to reply, and about whether the question of what she would have wanted was, by this point, his to ask. He thought about kindness. The kind thing to do, he thought, would be to write a short message. I am sorry. This is Maria's son, Tom. My mother died on the 14th of March. I thought you would want to know. I will not write again. That message, sent now, would end the worry of a person who was waiting for an answer to a question they had asked that morning. He thought about privacy. His mother had kept this phone in a drawer, switched off, under a pair of gloves, for what was clearly a long time. She had not mentioned it. She had not given the number to her family. She had, in some quiet way that the second phone proved beyond reasonable doubt, intended for the relationship with M to be hers and not theirs. To reply now, even kindly, would be to overrule that decision on her behalf, while she was no longer in any position to be consulted. He thought about himself. He thought about his own marriage, which was not perfect, and which had, over the years, contained small hidden territories that he hoped his wife had not, in any detail, known about. He wondered whether, in some other future, his children would one day go through his belongings and find evidence of those territories, and whether they would write to anyone. He did not know, sitting there on his mother's bed, what kind of person he was going to be in the next 10 minutes. He put the phone down on the duvet, very gently, as if it could break, and stood up and walked, slowly, to the window. Outside, in the small garden of the flats opposite, an old woman was hanging out washing on a line. She had a wooden basket on the grass beside her, and she was working unhurriedly, in the way of people who have done a thing many times, and to whom the doing of the thing was by now a small private pleasure. Tom watched her for a moment. He thought, as he watched, that he had not in his life paid careful attention to a woman hanging out washing, and that it was, in its quiet way, beautiful. Then he turned back from the window and walked across the room and picked up the phone again.